Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. Just scroll down to Your Financial Choices and look at the topics of interest. You can also catch us on the WDIY app. I want to start the show by thanking everyone for participating in our spring membership drive. I was told that we reached our goal this morning, so thank you very much, and thank you, Your Financial Choice listeners as well. Our topic this evening is extensions, estimates, and 22 planning. Yes, planning already for 2022. Well, we are in April, mid-April. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. James is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me. And if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to James. He'll write it down and he'll bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer them. But I love questions, my favorite part of the show, and I have such great listeners who ask such great questions. So that number again is 610-758-8810. Also, tax questions are welcome this evening as well. I'm just making up the topic to fill it in. We're almost at the end of tax season. The due date is April 18th this year, so you do have a few days. I shouldn't tell that to the procrastinators. I want you to still think it's April 15th so that you get your stuff done. Don't wait till the last minute and so that you can enjoy a nice weekend. Let's start talking about extensions. And I want to talk about estimates as well, estimated tax payments, because they can be kind of tied together. If you're in a pinch and hadn't filed your tax return, and maybe you're someone who does do estimates, or maybe you really don't have an idea of what your income looks like for whatever reason, and you might be a little off on what you owe, you could pad it a little bit, your extension payment. And by padding it a little bit, you might have an overpayment, and then you could apply that overpayment to 2022 or to your next estimate. So let me kind of go through a few of those items. And again, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. As I mentioned, today is April 13th. The normal due date of tax returns is April 15th, which would be Friday. And when there is a holiday that falls in, I believe, the District of Columbia, it's called Emancipation Day. If it falls on April 15th, then it's the next, you know, business day, which in this case is April 18th. That's why we have that due date. So that is Monday. If you are not prepared to file your return for whatever reason, maybe let me give you a few basic reasons why someone might have to do an extension, because one would think that you would have all the information you need to file a 2021 return that ended, 3.5 months ago, that you would have all that information. But why are there sometimes situations where you would have to extend? Typically, it's because we're waiting for what we call a pass-through tax reporting document, a Schedule K-1, which could come from a partnership, a corporation, an S corporation, an estate, or a trust. So those entities have to file tax returns. Some of their tax returns are due March 15th or April 15th, or occasionally a fiscal year, which might not coincide directly with your tax filing. But those entities also are allowed to do extensions. So if they do an extension, then you may not get your K-1 timely. For those returns for estates and trust, if they're due April 15th, and your return is due April 15th, then they might timely file, but you don't have time to get your information to your accountant or to get it into your tax program, whatever it might be. So you could be a little late. So typically, K-1s, pass-through activities, are usually what's causing people to be delayed in filing, you know, an accurate return. Another reason why someone might file for an extension, and this would be of particular interest to those who are self-employed. If you are self-employed and you have not thought about having a retirement account for yourself, a solo 401k or a SEP IRA for yourself, and you go to file your 2021 tax return and you realize you had an awesome profit this year, and shoot, now you owe a boatload of taxes. Well, if you did not have a retirement account in the past, this may be an opportunity for you to open one. And because we're after already the year end, you might think you can't fund a retirement plan for 2021 as a self-employed person. Well, you may still have an opportunity to do that by using a SEP IRA. A SEP IRA is the one solo retirement plan that we can still set up after the tax year, and you have until the extension due date to fund it. So that could be a reason you'd want to extend if, for example, you made a lot more money, but maybe you don't have the money today to put into that retirement account. The IRS gives you until the extension due date to fund that retirement account. And so if you extend, pay what you think you will owe with the assumption that you're going to fund this retirement account, figure out what you're going to owe, pay that with your extension, and then, you know, accumulate the money to fund the 2021 retirement contribution that you've calculated based on your profit for the year, based on a SEP IRA, and fund it by the extension due date. And you have to fund it before you file your return, whether you're filing, you know, on the regular due date or the extension due date. And this is for like solo 401ks or SEP IRAs. And in my circumstance I'm discussing right now, it's a SEP IRA because that's the only one you can set up after, you know, April 1st for the larger contribution. I'm not talking about a traditional IRA because traditional IRAs have other rules. This is a SEP IRA. So then you can have the time to fund it up to the extension due date, get some money. So that's another reason to extend, to be able to fund a retirement account. Now, I had mentioned if you didn't already have a plan, the SEP IRA is one that you could still set up for 2021. If you hadn't thought about this, and maybe for 2022 you want to do it, a solo 401k for self-employed people really provides probably the maximum contribution that you would be allowed to do, but you have to set that up within the tax year that you're going to contribute. So for those people who might have already set up a solo 401k, you do also have until the extension due date to fund it, but you would have had to have already opened the solo 401k, you know, like pre-1/1/2022. So for 2021, if you set up a solo 401k, we do this sometimes when we think a client might have a big profit, and if they've never had a retirement account before and they're self-employed, set up a solo 401k just in case. Then we find out their profit at the end of the year is big, and now we have the account, and then we can fund it. And again, you can fund it up until the extension due date. So that is another reason why one might extend. So waiting for pass-through K-1 tax reporting, waiting to fund a retirement account, or sometimes people have a business and they maybe just have been you know, not timely with keeping up with their records and they have to put it together, that type of thing. If you're in business, you should make sure that the bookkeeping's a priority for you. So I wouldn't use that as an excuse. When we come back from our first break, we will continue our discussion about extensions, estimates, and 2022 planning. And I'm going to give some tidbits about New Jersey toward the end of the show as well. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY's public affairs interviews are now on major podcast platforms. This month's edition of the Jennings Report features Alan Jennings talking to U.S. Senator Bob Casey.
There are lots of platforms and venues where Putin is being praised in our country. You know that.
Oh, my gosh. Even it's unbelievable. By a former president.
Yeah. Goofy American politicians who should pay a political price for what they're doing.
Listen to the Jennings Report, available now on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Also available at WDIY.org and on the WDIY app. We are discussing extensions, estimates, and 22 planning this evening. If you have questions, you're welcome to give us a call. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to James. He'll write it down and bring it in to me. And tax questions are still welcome. I know we're last minute, but anything to help you get it done, okay? So we were talking about extensions and that the due date is April 18th and you can extend your tax return. I want to remind people that this is an extension of time to file, not an extension of time to pay. Obviously, if it was an extension of time to pay, everyone would do it. But no, it's not an extension of time to pay. It's just an extension of time to file. And there's a couple different ways to do that, especially for those people who are like last minute and, oh, scrambling and can't get a hold of their accountant, or their accountant's not calling them back because the accountant's exhausted and been working, you know, 14 hours a day and just not getting back to you. You can do an extension yourself. So let me give you a couple ways to do an extension. One is the old-fashioned way. You can print out the extension form, which is a Form 4868. And the form for federal also extends the state return if you don't have a payment due to the state. So the 4868 for federal extension, print it off. If you don't think you owe anything, you could just put a zero, send it in the mail. You've extended your return. And if you don't owe, you know, IRS normally wouldn't care if you don't owe anything or if you're getting a refund, whether you file or not. But here's the problem. If you think you don't owe, or you think you're going to get a refund, and so you're not worried about filing your return timely, all of a sudden something happens on your tax return that you forgot or you missed, and now you owe. Well, if you haven't filed and you haven't filed for an extension, then you have a penalty for late filing. So always file an extension, even if you think you're going to have a refund or not owe, just in case. So you file for an extension. If you don't owe, you don't have to send any money with it. You just send in the extension form, 4868. And again, that state and local will piggyback off that as long as you've done it and if you don't owe. If you owe for the state, I know for Pennsylvania, I think it's a Form 267. My software does it, so I don't really think about it, and I have people who do it. But anyway, you would make a payment with the Pennsylvania extension if you do owe for Pennsylvania or whatever state. You would send in a payment with your extension. So there's paper filing. There's actually three ways to do it. So paper filing is one way. If you work with someone like a CPA or an accountant, accounting firm, or you have software for your tax preparation, one of the big softwares, you can file the extension electronically. So your accountant can file it for you, your CPA, you can file it yourself if you have the software to file for an extension and do it online. So that is another way to do it. Another way, a third way, which I actually only just learned about, because when you have software and, you know, we do it for people all the time, I don't think about a third option, which is if you're going to do it yourself, you can go to the IRS's website, irs.gov, and there is a link for filing an extension. You click on the link and it'll take you to another page called Direct Pay. It'll have a couple different links. You look for the link for Direct Pay and you can click on it. And again, it's the form 4868, but it doesn't, I don't think it necessarily says that. So you just have to kind of, it is, I would say, intuitive once you're doing it, but at first you're not sure until you're actually in doing it. When I went on with the website, irs.gov, and kind of searched for it, you search for extension and then you do it. So it is intuitive once you're doing it. Okay. So just, it's called Direct Pay, and then you're going to click a link to make a payment, do a drop down for extension, and then you will put your payment information in it. Obviously, I couldn't go through the whole sequence of information because I wasn't going to pay on an extension for anything, but it is. And there's also one for Pennsylvania. I'll talk about that in just a moment because we have a caller from Bath on line one, I believe. Hello, this is Lori. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. How can I help you?
So, okay, this might be a little bit off topic. I just wanted to see what your perspective was, see what a tax treatment this transaction needs.
Okay.
Because I'm helping my dad file his return, and, you know, the deadline is approaching.
Right.
So back in 2005, he co-signed for my sister to buy a house, my sister and her husband. So because he was a co-signer, they sold the house last year, and now he gets a 1099-S. I think it's the form.
Okay.
So he obviously has to report that, but can he also claim half of the basis, like the cost basis, or?
Well, if he co-signed, I'm not exactly sure if he was a co-owner, a joint owner. So was he on the deed as a joint owner?
He was on the deed, yeah.
Okay. All right, so if he participated in the appreciation, now he didn't live in the home, did he?
He did not, no.
Okay, because normally there is an exclusion for reporting any of the gain if you owned and lived in the home two out of the last 5 years. So what you're saying is he owned it, but he didn't live in it, and he was a joint owner. And is he going to actually receive the proceeds, or is sister taking all of the proceeds?
So he did receive proceeds. But, you know, they're not his per se, so, you know.
So he didn't.
He just received it.
Yeah, he didn't put any money into the house. He just co-signed for the loan?
He just co-signed for the loan, but because, you know, he was on the deed when the house was sold, he also received half of the proceeds.
Yeah, but what but, you're saying, he didn't put any money into the house. Is what you're saying, he didn't put any money in the house, and he actually, even though he got half the proceeds at the sale, he didn't keep the proceeds because they weren't his. They really were his
exactly.
daughter's. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. One thing that I would try to check out, and you could run this by someone, because I haven't had this situation, but I had a friend who had something similar. Ordinarily, okay. What you would do is if it was joint and, you know, both parties put half the money in, I would say that, yes, both parties have to report half. If your sister lived and owned it two out of 5 years, she doesn't have to report, you know, the gain to the extent of 250,000 single or 500,000 married filing joint. And then the other joint owner, if they owned it but didn't live in it, they would report their half of proceeds, but it would be income taxable. But in these circumstances, he was just a co-signer. And I have to apologize. First of all, I don't have your name, so I'm sorry. But if in these circumstances, it really was for convenience to sign as a co-signer. He had no real ownership as far as putting money into it. He didn't get the money out of it technically. So if from my perspective, and I would have to research this because I haven't had this case happen, in my perspective, he really doesn't get it. So there is something where you can say, really, they should have issued it all to sister. The 1099-S should have been all reported to her. And I can't give legal advice. I can't, you know, I can't give tax advice without the complete circumstances. But where what I would try to track or trace is if you could nominee dad's 1099-S to sister, meaning if it really belonged to her, then you report it on his return and then subtract it from his return saying to this social security number, sister's social security number, and then sister reports the whole thing. But go back and trace everything, see if you can prove that out, and then do a little research to see if that would be more appropriate. Because if he had no real monetary ownership in that, never put money in it, other than co-signing, I think you have a case to make that dad shouldn't have to report it and just back it out of his return. So put it on his return and then subtract it back out of his return and then report it on sister's. She might not have gotten a 1099-S, though.
Okay, but okay, so put it in his return and then back it out.
Yeah, it's called nominee, and I, again, I'm not giving advice. I'm saying these are the circumstances you want to go check to see if this case, if someone's just a co-signer, should they really have reported those proceeds to dad? I think maybe they should have really reported the proceeds all to your sister.
Yeah, I agree. I will research this.
Okay.
There's a call. The house was also rented.
I think that, there was a similar case that I saw where when they went to the agent, they told the agent, hey, we were just a co-signer, and the agent did the 1099-S all to the one owner, not to the split, not to the co-signer. So go back and double check and see if it makes a difference. Maybe check with the agent. Okay? Good luck with that.
All right.
Okay, take care. Bye. Folks, we are at our second break. A little complicated questions, and this is going to go into something I'm going to touch on at the end of the show as well. When I say at the end of every show, be proactive, not reactive, it's about trying to make sure that we understand the consequences of transactions that we have before we make those transactions versus after. Folks, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know that your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and that was just a very interesting question and call. So I hope that they go check that out, because I think that is certainly considering a co-signer on a home not really participating in the true ownership of it. I would think that they could find some remedy for the tax reporting document of the 1099-S. Again, that would be the potential nominee reporting to the true owner of the home, or go back to the agent and ask them to correct the 1099 reporting. All right, folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. James is in the studio to answer question or to answer calls, and you could talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. We're talking about, and it can be any question, tax question, whatever. I just have topics and wait for listeners' questions. That's what I do. So in talking about extensions, we talked about the Form 4868. We talked about paper filing a Form 4868. We talked about having your accountant or your software, if you're using tax software, can certainly do an extension. I will add, too, I had a friend who called me like in a panic the one night. He was preparing his daughter's tax return using some of the big box software. And he was telling me what the child tax credit was. I said, that doesn't make sense. She has two kids. That doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense. And he went back and he looked at his records and he found out that the kid is like 4 years old. And the two kids, 4 and 6. And he found out that he had put in, when the child was first born, that the child had only lived in the home 1 month because the child was born in December. And so he had put that the child had only lived 1 month in the home. And that carried forward every year thereafter in the tax software. And so that it never gave the credit, the child credit for that child thereafter, because a child has to live at least 6 months of the year in the home to get the child credit. So then he's like, what do I do? What do I do? I said, you have to file amended returns quick. 2018 has to be amended by April 15th. Quick, quick, amend it. And you could go back into the 2018 return within that software and click a box to amend the return, save it as a new return, and then put in the corrections. And voila, you have an amended 1040X tax return, and they're going to get back the credit that they had not claimed for 18, 19, and 20, and of course corrected it for 2021. So software can do extensions as well. Software can do amended returns and can do extensions. And you can go online at irs.gov, and there is a button for file an extension. And when you click it, it takes you to another page. It's called Direct Pay, and you can go through the instructions for the Direct Pay. Make sure you do drop downs for the extension. Put in your payment amount. It's going to take it from your bank account, basically. You put your banking information. And once you've paid in this manner, your extension is filed. Technically, you don't have to do a separate 4868. You have technically filed your extension by way of paying using the direct pay and the extension links at the irs.gov website. You can also do this for Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has mypath.pa.gov, and that also takes you through making a payment. To me, I like everything to be really, really clear. It's not necessarily really, really clear, but it does get you there. You can figure it out. You just have to kind of like read and look at the links. So it will take you through. There's drop downs. You say you're making a payment, click individual. And then once you click individual, it'll say extension. And you click on the extension and then you make your payment. And again, that acts as the extension. You don't have to send in separate payments for that. So I think that's really, quite convenient for a lot of people who are at the last minute going, oh my gosh, what do I do? Again, the reason you file the extension is because it's not an extension of time to pay. It's an extension of time to file. And if you don't do it and you end up owing, then you will have a penalty for failure to timely file. Those penalties add up when you have a failure for filing, a failure for making payments timely, and interest that can add up. So make sure you're doing your extensions if you have not already filed. So let's talk about estimates married to extensions for a moment. So if you are someone who has to file an extension because you're not sure what your income is going to be because you're waiting for that K-1 or you're waiting to fund that 401k or you're waiting to, do the last minute bookkeeping for your business. If you end up filing an extension and you have a payment due and you're someone who ordinarily makes estimates, you bake in the first quarter estimate into your extension payment. So if you think you're going to owe $5,000 and you normally do an extension or estimates of $1,000 a quarter, make your extension payment $6,000. That way, when you go to file your return next month or 2 months from now, and you thought you were going to owe $5,000 and you have paid in $6,000 with your extension, it would mean you're going to have a $1,000 overpayment, and you can apply your overpayments to your 2022 estimate. Why would you do that? Well, that's because if you need a little wiggle room, maybe your $5,000 actually turned into $6,000. So now you baked in a little bit of comfort there, and you can have your 2021 tax paid timely. Now you might be a tiny bit late with your estimate, but you're only a little bit late with the estimate versus being late with the payment. Okay, we're at the halfway point, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Allentown, the time is now 6:30, and your weather right now is 76 in clear skies. Tonight is going to be low around 60 degrees. On your Thursday, it's going to be a slight chance of showers, high 80 degrees. Thursday night, low around 46. And for your Friday, it's going to be sunny, high 69. Friday night, low 48. And for your Saturday, mostly cloudy and showers, high 68 degrees. And Saturday night, low around 40. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you very much, Shandi. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to James. He'll write it down and bring it into the studio, 610-758-8810. So talking about estimates, estimated tax payments come into play for you if you think you're going to owe income taxes and you have no other way to cover the taxes due. So how people typically cover taxes due, if we're working, we have wages, our employer withholds taxes from that, and we hope that that will cover the taxes due. Sometimes what happens when someone works, they might not withhold properly. This typically happens when you have two wage earners, spouses, and they both claim, you know, married filing joint, that means the employer applies the married filing joint standard deduction to each of them. And it doesn't work that way. You get one standard deduction, not two. So occasionally what will happen if they fill out their W-4 form and fill it in that they're married filing joint and don't check the box on the W-4 form that there's two wage earners, then it's going to be under withheld. If you under withhold and you have that happen 1 year and you owe a bunch of money, go back and update your W-4 form with your employer and check that box if there's two wage earners. Another reason why the withholdings might not be enough is the employer could be withholding based on your income, based on your filing status. Maybe if you have children or not, you put that on the form as well. But you might have a bunch of other outside income. Maybe you have some self-employment income. Maybe you have dividends and interest and capital gains, maybe Social Security, whatever other income on your return might be there. If you don't have tax withholding, how are you going to pay the tax? You might not even be able to withhold tax. Maybe you're not working. You just have dividends and income, interest and capital gains. How are you going to get that tax paid in? Well, we do it through estimated tax payments, and the IRS expects you to pay it as you go. It's a pay-as-you-go system, whether we're doing it through withholdings or estimates. Now, the withholdings are deemed to be made evenly throughout the year. Estimates are supposed to be made timely, quarterly, April 15th, June 15th, September 15th, and then January 15th of the next year. Why do they give us till January 15th of the next year? Because it allows us to kind of have some time to calculate what we think the income is by year end. If we need to adjust it, we can add some extra there. So the 1040 estimates that maybe your accountant gives you, or your CPA gives you, they're just estimates, right? Estimates. So you can always modify those as you go along if you think the income is going to change. Sometimes maybe the income might drop significantly. You hadn't thought of it. Or the income increases significantly. You can adjust it. But it is a pay-as-you-go system. You can do your estimates. You can do them quarterly and set them up. And I had some profound statement I was going to make, and I just lost track of what it was. So your estimate, I hope it'll come back to me. The estimate is based on the prior year and typically, or what you think is going to come. But there are what we call safe harbor rules. So you want to make the estimate based on what you think your income is going to be, but at a minimum, what you owed in the prior year. So if in 2021, your tax liability was $20,000 and you have to make estimates, that would be $5,000 a quarter. But if you know in 2022, your income's going to double, so you expect that your taxes are going to double. At a minimum, the IRS says as a safe harbor, you have to pay in as much as you owed in the prior year. So I would only have to do the $5,000 a quarter again in 2022. And I would just have to keep in mind that, oh, that's right, my safe harbor was $20,000, but golly, my income's going to double and I think it's going to be $40,000 next year. You have to know that next April, you're going to owe another $20,000. Some people say, I don't want to be surprised and I don't want to owe that much. So they'll up their estimates as they go. So keep that, you know, you want to work with someone maybe to kind of do some projection, understand what your estimates are. If you have both the opportunity to do estimates and withholdings, sometimes what we'll do is we'll withhold extra amounts from, let's say, an IRA distribution. If you have required minimum distributions, we'll withhold maybe all of the taxes from the IRA distribution if they owe that much money. So you do have some options to make those payments via just estimates, just withholdings, or a combination of the two. I know what I was going to say. My thought was I had someone who, didn't understand why they owed, and they had $280,000 of income without any tax withholdings. So you don't realize sometimes this income can sneak up on you if it's capital gains or capital gain distributions, or if you have an investment advisor who's taking gains in your portfolio and you rely on them and you don't pay attention, you don't realize you have all these gains. Surprise, surprise, they don't have withholdings when you incur investment income, interest, dividends, capital gains, capital gain distributions. There's no withholding on that. You have to kind of be aware of that and realize, oh, shoot, love the gains, love the interest, love the dividends, but oh, that's right, we have to pay the piper at some point. So we do have to pay the income tax on that income that otherwise does not have withholdings on it. And I hope that makes sense to everyone listening. And reminder, the 1040 ES, that's the vouchers, ES, that you would fill out to complete and pay quarterly. And you want to make sure you put your Social Security number on the check and what you're doing, 1040 ES, Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. Same thing applies at the state level. If you have estimates for the state, you would do the very similar thing. Pennsylvania doesn't like necessarily when we take withholdings out of what I'll call retirement accounts. Retirement distributions are reported on a 1099-R, and we typically automatically kind of do that out of IRAs traditionally. But Pennsylvania doesn't tax retirement accounts. People will take money out of annuities, and annuities will have taxable distributions, will have federal tax withholdings out of it. And if it's a non-qualified annuity, there would be income tax on that for Pennsylvania, but it's reported on a 1099-R. Pennsylvania's never been a fan of any state withholdings on a 1099-R because they're not used to 1099-Rs being taxable, like from retirement accounts, pensions, IRAs, those kinds of distributions. But annuities are reported on 1099-R. And I'm telling you, I've had more notices from Pennsylvania saying, you know, you owe money because they don't recognize the PA withholdings. I think they're getting a little better. I try to attach electronically a copy of the 1099-R when there is withholdings from a non-qualified annuity, but just be aware of that. They're not really fans of it. So in that circumstance, it is going to be taxable as interest income, believe it or not, and then you have to probably do estimates for that. Remember, though, if you are retired and you don't have retirement income and you just have a little bit of investment income, there is something called special tax forgiveness. If your income is within a certain threshold for your family size, household size, you may qualify for tax forgiveness. And that is a form SP, I believe. So you can may not have to pay income tax on some of that investment income you have. They do make sure, though, that you factor in what they call non-taxable income in that calculation of eligibility income. For example, an inheritance might throw you out of the eligibility income. Not tax-exempt interest, such as savings bond, U.S. savings bond interest, might throw you out of the eligibility income. Life insurance proceeds, that type of thing. So just be aware of that, but something not to forget about. So we've talked a little bit about estimates and why we do them, because I said it's a pay-as-you-go system. You can also do those online as well. I have just seen, I would say this year, I've probably had a few people tell me they went online to make their estimated tax payments. They're doing it online. It's becoming more and more popular. Had not really seen it that much. Maybe one client last year, two maybe. And then this year I've had a handful more. So you can also go online and pay your estimated tax payments directly through the IRS's website, irs.gov, or through the mypath.pa.gov website. And, you know, then you know they got it. That could be a benefit. Not having to send, you know, certified mail to make sure they get it. You know they got it. You see it online. If you don't make your payments, either through withholdings or through estimated tax payments, you may have a penalty for underpayment. And there are some exceptions to the application of the penalty. As I said, one of the safe harbors to avoid a penalty for underpayment would be to pay in at least as much as you owed in the prior year. You typically would fill out a form 2210 to calculate the penalty and then to apply the exception to the penalty. So there are a couple other penalties a couple other exceptions where you wouldn't have to file the 2210, and that is if you had no tax liability for 2020, you were a U.S. citizen or a resident alien for the entire year, and your 2020 tax return was for a full 12 months. Then that is an exception, and you would not have to file the 2010. The total tax shown on your 2021 return minus the amount of tax you paid through withholding is less than $1,000. So if your balance due is less than $1,000, you also will not have an underpayment penalty. So you try to get that within $1,000 and you also would be okay, no penalty. The other exceptions, as I mentioned, you have to file the 2210 to apply the exceptions. One other exception I've used a number of times to avoid penalties is something called the annualization method. The annualization method allows you to say, how did I earn my income over the year? Was I really expected to do estimates? So maybe the first quarter, you would have owed nothing. The second quarter, you would have owed nothing. The third quarter, you would have owed nothing. And in the fourth quarter, you did $1 million IRA conversion to a Roth. Well, now you owe, you know, $250,000. Well, the exception to the penalty would be, I'm going to annualize it, and I wouldn't have been subject to paying tax those first three quarters. And then in the fourth quarter, I might have done a fourth quarter estimate, and that covered me, and that would be doing the annualization method. Okay, so those are some options for If you're filing your tax return and you look like you owe a lot of money and your software or your accountant is telling that you have a penalty for underpayment of tax, you can ask, is there any exception to the penalty? Sometimes you can beg for abatement of that penalty. For example, I had a friend who lost her husband. This year she owed, a boatload of money, and he was working and had withholdings. Then he stopped working. There's no more withholdings. She didn't realize she was going to have investment income that wouldn't be covered and end up having a penalty. And the CPA who was preparing the return just asked for a waiver because of the circumstances, because of the death. And the IRS is really good about that. From my experience, they're very good if you're reasonable and you're not asking for some kind of abatement every single year. And if there's a valid reason, illness, disabilities, things like that. All right, folks, we are at the last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can also send questions to yourfinancialchoices.com. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about 2022 planning and some New Jersey tidbits. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1 FM and on WDIY.org and the WDIY app. You can listen to podcasts of prior shows at WDIY.org and on yourfinancialchoices.com. I want to give a couple of these tidbits from New Jersey real quickly before I start talking about 2022 planning, because I don't want to miss mentioning them. Because it's come up a couple times this year on some returns I've prepared. New Jersey residents, when you file your New Jersey return, you get a deduction for medical expenses. And here's where it can get really confusing, and you really have to pull out your pay stub if you're working to reconcile this. And that's because New Jersey taxes your income differently than federal does, as far as things like a health savings account and, your medical premium contribution type of thing. So you need to look at a pay stub to reconcile to figure out what is included in your New Jersey income that's really medical that you can then further down your tax return take a deduction for medical, as well as your other medical expenses. It's, your medical expenses. It could be premiums and out-of-pocket copays, that kind of thing. Your medical expenses can be a deduction for you. Now, there is a limit, and I think this is where I'm surprised how many New Jersey people don't seem to be aware of this. There, and maybe this is why, because there is a limitation. So if you only get the deduction if it exceeds 2% of your income. Now, retirees may be in a situation where you have high investment income, maybe get an exclusion on some of the pension and retirement income New Jersey allows once you're, old enough to get those exclusions. Maybe you get an exemption as a veteran and over 65. But your income still might, you still might end up having a taxable income consequence from that. So if the income's high enough to be taxable, but low enough that the 2% of that income might really open the door for a large medical deduction. You also get a deduction for property tax in New Jersey. So keep in mind, a deduction for medical expenses on New Jersey, I thought people would be aware of that, and it's not obvious. It's not really very obvious, because the other reason is when we're not itemizing for federal purposes anymore, and you can itemize deductions, and sometimes people would traditionally give us their medical expenses because, you know, you might itemize. Quite often, we really don't get that deduction anyway. Now, with such a high standard deduction, people really aren't itemizing, so they're not thinking about the medical deductions as much anymore. So when we don't have the medical deductions, we're not itemizing, we're not entering it, and that's how it flows through to New Jersey return. We might miss that deduction. So keep that in mind. The other thing I wanted to mention is in 2022, there were some legislative changes in New Jersey, and they are now allowing a tax deduction for contributions to a 529 account for households earning up to $200,000. So if you make more than that, you wouldn't get the deduction. And this was from an article in the New Jersey CPA Journal by Ralph Loggia, who's a CPA and wrote an article on this. New Jersey provides tax deduction for college savings plan contributions. And he refers to, like, for example, New York has one, and it's a maximum of $10,000. I think, like, lots of states have a deduction now. I think he wrote that there were like 35 states. Pennsylvania, if there's spouses, each could do $15,000 to one kid. That's a $30,000 deduction. If you have three kids or three grandchildren, you could do $30,000 to each of them, as long as you have income. So it's capped at the annual gift exclusion, which is $15,000 in 2021 and $16,000 in 2022. So it is capped there, and it's also capped based on your income. So if you have spouses, you'd each have to have at least that much income. Other states also have them. I know my brother-in-law has one in Indiana. So beginning in 2022, New York will join its peers in allowing a state income tax deduction of up to $10,000 per taxpayer with a gross income of $200,000 or less under the New Jersey College Affordability Act. So I'm sure you can check out more information on that, but I wanted to mention it because as you do your planning now, segue to 2022 planning for our New Jersey listeners. As you're doing your planning, this may be of much more interest to you because you can make a contribution to a 529 plan if your income is below the thresholds and benefit from a tax deduction for that. So keep that in mind. Other items, you know, I want to mention when I talk about 2022 planning and to, you know, kind of referencing back to the earlier caller, when we talk about being proactive, not reactive at the end of the show, there's real, real weight behind being proactive when you have financial transactions that could impact you. You want to make sure you understand what the consequences are either before you enter into them or before you finish them. I have another situation right now that I called it the situation. We have a situation. I have a tax client, not an investment client, a tax client who did a very large gift to her children. And it exceeds the federal estate and gift exemption. And she did not realize she even did this. It was a certain ownership. I won't get into all the details of it. But she had no idea of the value of what she gifted. And now we have a situation. And this was something done several months ago. And she's saying, oh my gosh, oh, I didn't know. I didn't intend it to be that much. What do I do now? And I said, well, you scramble, you find an attorney to see if they can help you do the estate planning and valuation for this gift to see if we can get a discount on it because it's out of my wheelhouse, the particular transaction that was done. She could be facing anywhere between $400,000 to $2.5 million of gift tax. So that is something now we're having to be reactive for something that was done in September of 2021. First time we're hearing about it was yesterday. A little late gift tax return due Monday. No money to pay that gift tax. No way to know how that property should be properly valued for gift tax purposes. It may be under the annual or the lifetime exemption. I don't know. It may be under. She may have no gift tax problem. I only know the information I was given at the last minute and what it appeared to be. So needs proper attention. But the best time to have done that planning would have been before the gift was done, before. Because sometimes there's, you know, more strategic ways to enter into, you know, a financial transaction or to accomplish the goal that you have. You know, you have a goal of passing on to your children, maybe to use that lifetime exemption. We thought maybe it was going to go away at one point, but that was really back in 2020. It really went by the wayside in 2021. So there was no desperate need to do that kind of transaction necessarily. But getting an attorney involved would have been, you know, the number one box to check on the list. So proactive versus reactive. You have so many more options when you're proactive, when you're thinking about it. Planning has a purpose and a reason, and you could save a lot of headaches and possibly a lot of taxes. So keep that in mind. Now, part of the other 2022 planning we're talking about is income tax planning, withholding versus estimates. So we had talked about doing estimated tax payments for people who don't want to do estimates. They don't want to remember to do the quarterly payments. You can increase your withholding if you have the opportunity or the kind of income that you could do withholding, such as an IRA or increasing your withholding on wages or a pension, things like that. If, for example, you have a pension, you say, well, gosh, I just filled out the form and my pension, they barely take any money out of it. Maybe you have a pension and Social Security and you're not having withholding out of the Social Security and the pension is taking out, you know, a couple $100. Well, when you put those two sources of income together, now we have a taxable situation. You could either ask Social Security to increase your withholdings on your Social Security payments, or you can fill out a W-4P for your pension and ask them to increase, do an additional amount each month from your pension. You can indicate actually a line item of an additional amount that you would want taken out. So you can change that. Also, anticipate what you're going to have for 2022. If you think you're going to have a change in circumstances, remember proactive planning or, you know, being proactive. What is going to change in 2022? Did you get a job, get a bonus, get, you know, stock options, stock awards? Did you retire? Are you going to now start collecting Social Security when you didn't have it before? Remember, that can impact the taxes. What do you expect for capital gains or losses? Did you sell a house? Did you sell a rental property? If you have a rental property, to our caller earlier, if you had a rental property and you'd been taking depreciation on it all these years, I think he'd said they bought the house in 2005. We're in 2022. That is like, what, 15, 17 years later, a lot of depreciation will have been taken on that house if it was a rental property. That reduces the cost basis and causes more of the income to be taxable. That wasn't a principal residence. Now that I'm thinking this through, it wasn't a principal residence for this family. It was a rental property. And that has income tax implications. The depreciation gets recaptured and taxed differently than capital gains. It's not all long-term capital gains. It's actually could be at ordinary tax rates or up to 25% on depreciation recapture. So you have to make sure you know what's happening and coordinate your planning and think it through. And are there any other strategies that you can implement to offset these things? Now, they might have had passive losses that were suspended that they couldn't take in prior years too, and that will help offset some of those gains, but it doesn't always offset everything. Other planning I want to make sure you're doing to be proactive: review your assets, your titling, your beneficiary designations, your contingent beneficiary designations. Had a question from someone today who'd found me on the FPA website about Mom is inheriting an account. Mom has creditor issues. Daughter had died prematurely. Mom's the beneficiary. The retirement account's not a large retirement account, but it's going to end up going all to probably creditors. And if daughter might have named contingent beneficiaries, mom might have the opportunity to disclaim that retirement account, and then that way it might not go to creditors. So I recommended they contact an attorney and talk that through to see what options mom has and how you disclaim. Disclaim, you say, I don't want it. And you have to do it in a particular order and a particular time and in a particular way, but an attorney can certainly help with that. So check out your beneficiaries, your beneficiary designations, because that's what gives someone flexibility. It's called postmortem planning. It gives someone flexibility after you're gone. Check out your 401k contributions, increase those if you can, and check your withholdings on your W-4. Check out your health savings account contributions and think about how you're gifting, as to my earlier example. Be careful. So, folks, we hopefully have covered a lot. I will be taking a break for 2 weeks. We are going to have pre-recorded shows for the next couple of weeks. I'll be back first week of May, hopefully. And we hope that you enjoy the holiday weekend for those who celebrate, and enjoy spring. I'm coming out of tax season and I'm really enjoying seeing the flowers come out. Thank you, James Johnson, for being here this evening. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, listeners, and for calling in with questions. I really appreciate it. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.